Welcome to Kick-Ass Radio, hosted by Jo Sainsbury, founder of Kick-Ass Women. Join Jo over the next hour as she shares stories and conversations that are both inspiring and empowering. Having spent over 30 years in the corporate sector, Jo Sainsbury kicked off her heels and became a coal train driver working in the rail and mining industry. It has been her goal ever since to empower and support women who are considering a career change into an industry role, making the transition as smooth as possible. Jo is a walking, talking success story of how taking the plunge into industry can open up a world of opportunity. And you can do it too. If you're a woman working in industry or considering a career change, this is the radio station for you. Let's get into this episode of Kick-Ass Radio.
Hey there, Glowgetters. Welcome to the Kick-Ass Radio Show. Am I excited for today's show? You bet your kick-ass I am. Now, women in health and safety is a huge topic at the moment, and with an influx of events that focus on issues specific to women in industry, there is an ever-growing number of women becoming more prominent. However, it's hugely important that we focus on attracting not only women to the industry, but also different ethnicities, sexualities, and religious backgrounds, and women of all diverse backgrounds. So statistics show that companies with a strong mix of sexes outperform competitors by 15%, and those with a mix of diverse employees by 35%. So if companies want to be cutting edge, fresh ideas and perspectives are imperative. So although many companies have come on leaps and bounds with their equitable policies, attraction is still an issue, particularly within industries such as construction and in the field of safety. So the key thing here is to change how the industries and safety are perceived. And the same goes for women in all industries. So the more we demonstrate inclusive policies and women-focused events, the better the perception and attraction will be. So common themes we hear about are that some women experience hostility in male-dominated safety fields, and the importance of networking and finding mentors cannot be emphasised enough. So relevant too is how much that being a member of a women's network can help with progression in health and safety careers, both from a networking and knowledge development perspective. So one problem that has faced a lot of women who try to get into the safety field is lack of mentors. People who have been more experienced safety and health professionals tend to be male, and they tend to look for other young men they can mentor and bring up through the fields. So they may feel threatened by women entertaining or entering this field. And that can be a challenge because mentorship is very critical, and that's in any career. And that's one of the things we hope to do today is discuss that in greater detail and create a more well-known space for women, like our special guest today, Alana Ball, the CEO and founder of Women in Safety. Now, Women in Safety is a network designed to encourage women working as safety professionals to discuss issues, barriers, and to help each other grow and learn within their careers and their industries. And Alana is a firm believer in gender equality, collaboration, and mentoring. Growing up in industrial Gladstone, Alana's parents taught her the importance of hard work and integrity. As a young girl, her dream was to make a difference, but she wasn't really sure what that would mean. Now, moving from regional Queensland to London at the age of 20, Alana worked in human resources with the Financial Services Authority and was recognised for her contributions to whole of business, large-scale projects. Now, Alana transitioned her career focus from human resources to health and safety back in 2011. And soon after, while working in the jungles of Papua New Guinea, Alana came to the realisation she had found herself in a man's game and knew something had to shift. So in 2014, she officially founded Women in Safety with the aim of creating a network of like-minded, supportive safety professionals to learn, listen and grow with. Alana was named a finalist in the 2016 National Safety Council of Australia's Safety Awards and continues to grow her Women in Safety brand. You are listening to the Kick-Ass Radio Show Kickstart, where we talk about all things women working in non-traditional roles in varied male-dominated industries, and we tell you how it is. I'm your host, Jo Sainsbury, the Glowgetter. I hope we can keep you in good company over the coming hour. A huge shout out to all the women working out on track and on site today, all over the globe. Stay safe and have a fantastic day or night shift. And this might also be a good time for a trigger warning that today's radio show may and does contain some adult language. So let's get into it. Welcome, Alana, to Kick-Ass Radio.
Thank you, Jo. What an introduction. I love that.
A bit long-winded, but we got there.
Yeah, I love it. And I think I love, you know, all the topics that you cover on. And I guess it sums up exactly why we're having this conversation. So really, really appreciate that.
That's no worries at all. So let's kick things off. Tell us a little bit more about yourself and your background and your career thus so far.
Yeah, well, look, you fairly summed it up. Grew up in regional Queensland, and really industrial town. Saw a lot of the people I kind of was growing up with, friends, family, the guys I went to school with, going into some really heavy industries, getting hurt, coming home. You know, and I will always tell the story of my brother being a, you know, apprentice boilermaker, coming home with scars all off his arms from. What, doing his job didn't make sense. I always had this vision of, as you said, helping people and helping people in their role and what makes people tick and why do we choose to do these things, and thought human resources was the way to go. But, you know, year on year, I started to see this trend start tracking towards human resources really being what the name suggests, and that humans were a resource. And right amount of time, right amount of money, we can get more resources, but we can't get more humans. And that's what I was really struggling with. It's this human element had gone out of HR for me, and I wanted something to change. So shifted across into health and safety. Certainly eyes opened in my first health and safety role, as you said, up in Papua New Guinea, where the, I guess, importance of life is very different in the jungles of Papua New Guinea than it is, you know, in regional Queensland, in a city, and, you know, the rules and regulations we have and just the way that we live. So it really was this eye-opener of, wow, this is really life or death for some of these guys in how they operate, how they communicate, how do we get, you know, the risk across to these people that, you know, even within their village, there is still a lot of infighting, and, you know, we're talking spears and machetes, and you're like, how do I tell someone to follow this safety procedure when actually their risks at home are so volatile? So it really was an eye-opener and a really great lesson in really breaking down the work we do to the risks and how important it is that every audience you explain that risk to is going to be different. So I loved it. I would never take that experience back, because I think from day one, it gave me a really good foundation to say, no amount of paperwork is going to save this person's life. This is about people. And I have kept that from day one, is that everything I want to deliver is about making sure that the people understand and are aware of what could hurt them, injure them, not get them home to their family. Because at the end of the day, that's all any of us want. We don't go to work to get hurt. So it did that. But what it quickly taught me was that I didn't have the people to turn back to and go, this is what I'm struggling with. How can I have these conversations? Who do I learn from? Who do I talk to? Who do I vent about it? And the traditional kind of networking models that were around at the time were, dare I say, male, pale and stale. And it did not suit bright pink wearing, loud, sometimes obnoxious. I'm sure my brother would say obnoxious. But, you know, and had some really bloody dumb questions. And I wanted those to ask those dumb questions, because we all have to learn. And those dumb questions show an element of curiosity. And that's all I can ever want in anyone. Be curious enough to ask the question. Founded Women in Safety, very much out of a personal need of, thought there might be three or four of us. Let's have a wine. Let's have a catch up. You know, let's share some of these dumb questions, which rapidly grew into, you know, so much more than that. So we're 2,000 members on now. Quit my full-time job last year to host this full-time and to offer health and safety consulting full-time, and have not looked back. I love it.
And definitely we can see that. Congratulations, Women in Safety is a great brand. You've created a wonderful resource there. Just going back to life in Gladstone, and as we mentioned before we come on air there, I spent a bit of time in Gladstone, and yes, presented a very industrial town. You had the smelter, the power station and the Port Authority there. So much more. So you definitely grew up there with eyes wide open in a male-dominated workforce and town there, and progressed that way. And then living in Papua New Guinea, so not only work safety but personal safety has always been a major concern up there. I know from my previous work history, we had a lot to do. A lot of our field service technicians used to go to New Guinea, and they'd and some families would transfer up there to work there, but lived in compounds under highly secure circumstances. And yeah, personal life.
Yeah, look, we had the security guard out the front, and I'll never forget the day I had to get to the airport, and we were waiting for my transport out to the airport, and he was our security guard, and he was fast asleep, and I'm talking, I like shoved him, kicked him, yelled him, like bashed on the wall, and he was sound asleep. And the security guard's dog, that's meant to be this all vicious, you know, anyone turns up at this compound, we're going to be protected. Well, he was asleep too. Gun laying on him, fast asleep. I'm like, what bloody use are you to me? Felt real safe that day, but yeah
a great life experience. And how did they accept, you know, the introduction of safety protocol up there? Was it a hard task to actually explain that it would be better for them in the long run?
I think when, again, it comes down to what are you trying to sell them? And for us, we had to get them to see, you know, and as basic as this sounds, you cut off your finger at work, you're not working. You're not working, you're not taking that money home to your village. And that money to your village is worth so much to them. So I need you to understand that you hurting yourself impacts your village, and they wouldn't want to be the person that impacted the village. So the language we had to use was very different. You know, we had to, I'll never forget the guy that serviced our vehicles. Like, this is to the how to create a message that they understood. Was he said to his blokes, fill up the back of the ute, you know, with the workshops dirty, put all the rubbish in the back of the ute, take it to the dump and burn it. Hours later, can't find his blokes, can't find his truck, what the hell? Two blokes hours later walk into the workshop and he says, well, fellas, where's my car? Well, boss, you told us to fill it up, take it to the dump and burn it. And he's like, I can't get up. That's what I told you to do. And that, for me, that was like in my first week up there that he told me that story. And I was like, you really have to take that on and go, right. And this is, you know, any message that we put out in safety, what is it actually telling our audience? And you think of language literacy, numeracy. If we talk about diversity, we all come from diverse educations, diverse backgrounds, languages at home, literacy levels. How are we not considering that? Here's a health and safety manual, 200 pages long.
Comprehend and implement.
Yeah. And it's just like, where's that journey lost in how we actually talk to the people who need it the most? You know, we're so hell-bent on creating these fantabulous systems that I think we forget sometimes that don't take it to the dump and burn it. Yeah. Think about what that message actually sends.
And it is, and it's, we all become so complacent with our own perceptions and understandings of things. We need to take a walk in someone else's shoes to see it from their perspective, so much more open.
Well, it's, you know, it's even down to, we had to teach them how to fill up a bucket, like to wash the tools, right? Fill up the bucket, put soap in the bucket and fill it up. I can't remember the exact wording, but long story short, it was essentially we had to tell them to measure out their detergent, because it was like, fill up the bucket.
So they're filling it up.
Yeah, where's all the detergent gone? Yeah, so it's those literal things that it's How is this interpreted? That was not on them. That is on me.
Yes.
Because I wrote that program to keep them safe, or that system, mm-hmm. or that document to keep them safe. And I think there is, as you said, that implied knowledge, that implied education that sits behind it.
Yeah, and we need to take on so much more of a broad perspective and be much more understanding of others when we're presenting information like that. So I think we've kind of covered this. I was going to ask you, can you describe the aha moment for you in your career when you did decide to work in health and safety, and that might have been?
Yeah, I think I've had a few. One was working in HR over in London, and we were doing a large-scale redundancy program, and they were all, you know, forensic accountants, you know, suited and booted and worth their fortunes. And, you know, there's a floor of them. There's 200 and something on the floor. And here's 20-year-old Aussie me walks in. All I'm interested in is getting to the pub in the afternoon and having my snake bites. And I was responsible for, so essentially they'd done this program where it was like you were in your performance review, you were given a 3, exceeding 2, you were meeting 1, you're out the door. So anyone that was a 1, you were automatically redundant. Anyone that was a 2 went through an interview process, and with the outcome of the interview process, either redundant or your job was safe. 3s, your job was safe. Now, little old me was the one that was responsible this day, and I'll never forget it. I had my pile. Here's all your letters in envelopes. I had to walk the floor. Now, it was fairly open plan, despite only being, what, maybe 2005. And, like, all of the computer desk, kind of you could see everyone's heads.
Yeah.
So here's me, pile of letters. They all know it's coming. 20 years old, being the bearer of bad news. Here's your redundancy letter. And I was just like, oh. So we're not even going to have a conversation with them. And this is why I say around that, when people become treated as a resource and we lose that human element to it, we didn't care about their well-being.
No.
Here's your letter, pack your bag.
That was the end of them.
Yeah. And 20-year-old me, who knows nothing about them, nothing about their circumstances, is just this person. They're like, shit, is she coming for me? Is she going to put a letter on my desk? And I've never felt so sick in my life being the bearer of bad news. It's like the guy that does the, you know, you've been served, like, here's your, yeah. So that was one where I was just like, this is not okay. And then, yeah, you know, working in PNG, where you're just like, okay, the way we write and who we're writing this for is so important, because it's the difference between your truck being burnt down and the job being done properly. Yeah.
And as we said, the end message is we always want to come home every day, and we want to come home safely. We don't want to come home injured or harmed in any way.
Yeah.
So we need to reinforce that. And however best we can explain it and get those messages across is what we need to focus on in each particular situation.
Who's our workforce? Who are we talking to here? Yeah.
And as you said, and that's workforce business today is much more, or we need to be much more empathetic, you know, our emotional intelligence skills, our communication, and women are more so always naturally more nurturing, but those skills are so prevalent in today's workforce and in leadership. It has to be so much more. So we need to be on more of a personable relationship with the employees and having those, you know, those conversations. So if the time does come to actually have to do that kind of task with them where you're handing them their final notice, it can be a conversation, and it can be a well-being.
It's a human element. We're all people. We all have emotions that need to be, you know, thought about. So
yeah, that's exactly right. So can you recall any time when you question your involvement in professional health and safety field because of your gender? Like, have you had any role models or mentors to help you out along the way?
Yeah, look, I have been quite fortunate, and it's, I will always say this to any of our members, that mentoring, there's two parts to that. Mentoring, I'll come back to. The element I wanted to walk away, 100%. rocked up to a site in Fiji, and it is not the glamorous Fiji of sipping cocktails by the beach by any means. Again, middle of the jungle. And we worked with this site manager there who he just wanted me gone. He was just like, I've been untouched by anyone from corporate for such a long time. And now this young upstart of a chick who knows nothing, you know, fairly fresh in health and safety, she's rocked up and she's going to tell me how to do my bloody job. Get out. He made life a little bit hard. He made, you know, we would have to go into town down to Suva, and he would book a hotel for us for whatever reason. We had to do stuff in town before going back up to site. And I'd be like, oh, hi, it's Alana Ball. And they're like, sorry, miss, there's no booking for that. And I'm like, oh, you know, I have to ring him. And anyway, he said, oh, ask him if it's under Foxy. And I'm like, is there a booking under Foxy? Oh, yes, Miss Cleopatra. I'm like,
oh, my goodness.
So they think my name's Foxy Cleopatra. And, you know, don't get me wrong, laugh about it, but you just go, that's the shit that I shouldn't, you know, he would never have done that if it was one of the boys.
Yeah.
Never. Then I've worked in transport and logistics, and some of those truck drivers, one in particular, definitely copped a mouthful from me that I don't think he expected. Wanted me to see whether, you know, come check out me sleeper cab, love. Like, I'll tell you what to do with your sleeper cab, mate, and it ain't pretty. There's paint scrapers on site, and someone had left it on a bit of kit, and I'm bringing it back going, guys, we can't leave this shit. Like, if this goes on the road and goes flying into someone else's car, like, come on. But because paint scraper, you're making us a cake, love. And at the time, I don't think I thought a lot of it. But over time, collecting those stories has made me realize, and I've got hundreds of them.
Yep.
Talk to whether my husband, my brother in high-risk industries, friends, family that have all been in it. Males do not have those stories.
No, they don't. No.
They just simply do not have them.
You might hear of the occasional, you know, when they start their apprenticeship.
I was going to say the apprenticeship stories. Yeah, yeah.
But nothing per se when they're actually in the field doing those jobs.
Qualified professional.
And that behaviour was such an acceptable behaviour back in the 70s, the 80s.
Yeah,
the
90s. Yep.
And that was the stereotypical way that the male worked.
Yeah, it was an engagement. Up. You know, oh, it's funny.
It's a joke. Hey, I was only joking. Yep. Love.
Yeah. And, you know, we went onto this site once and they got pretty pissed off at me because I'm like, look, can we not just take the porn off the wall?
Yeah.
This is the lunchroom for everyone. This is not okay. There's definitely the stories. From the mentoring side, I don't think I could have got through it without those role models and mentors, both genders. I have had some absolutely phenomenal males.
Yeah. Mentors.
Guide, coach. Mm. Absolutely. Some of the best leaders I've worked for. And it's their ability to, as you said, have that emotional intelligence, have that kind of conversation. And I have always said to my members, mentoring is, and you said at the start of this, is so important. Mm-hmm. There is not a day now, I don't think, that I am not touching base with at least one of, and I don't just have one mentor. You know, they're in different pockets of my life, different areas of business, personal growth, you know, the membership there. So I think it's really valuable for anyone listening. And I'm talking, you don't have to have, you know, the massive big mentoring programs that exist. No. It can be as simple as calling someone up. And one of my close friends, you know, she was a Telstra Women in Business Award winner. I knocked on her door, LinkedIn, and said, hey, I'm looking for a mentor. Is this something you'd be interested in? Jumped at the chance and is now, you know, yeah, one of my nearest and dearest. But it just took that courage to say, you know, are you open to mentoring?
And it is. And like, I'm a big believer in mentoring. And as you said, I too had some great male mentors in my career history. And you cannot just put them into a business sense. You know, they can be friends that are successful in their own businesses. They can be great mentors as well, and good.
And I think it is. It's just, yeah. Yeah. And I think it is just asking the question to be like, hey, I saw you did this really well. That can be a form of mentoring. I want to talk to you or pick your brain about this. And I think the important part of that, though, and this is what my mentor taught me, is that you can either be a drawbridge lady or a Rapunzel lady, that you get to the top of the tower and you either roll your hair down and say, come on up, I'll help you. I'll give you all the skills, the knowledge, everything I've learned to come up with me. Or you get across, because you've had all these wonderful mentors, you get across to your castle and you pull that drawbridge up and you stop anyone else coming. And I said to her, I'd always vowed to be a Rapunzel, because I just think everything I've learned, open book. You know, this is my story. This is my journey, which is why we're having a chat. You know, I don't want people to feel isolated in their journey, that there are so many avenues to seek that help.
And that's the number one thing. Always, and you said that earlier on, always be curious. Always be curious. And there's never a dumb question, you know.
No.
It may sound dumb, but it's never a dumb question. And you always need to ask and find out. If you think it's dumb, the recipient that you're asking will probably turn around and say, hey, great question, glad you asked, you know. So never be afraid to ask those questions and always be curious. But I wanted to say, just in regards to the old workplace attitudes and behaviours, I worked in a heavy earth moving machinery dealership for a lot of years, and this is back in the early piece. And as you said, all the boys used to have all the girly calendars out in the workshop. And if you had to walk out to the workshop, you know, they're hanging off the sides of all the toolboxes and that. And the year was the first year the fireman's calendar got introduced. So we used to have the fire brigade come and do drills and that at the dealership and whatnot. So when they come the next time, I'd purchase the calendar, and we had a couple of the local firemen actually in the calendar, and I got them to sign it because they were out on the drill practice. And I hung that off the side of my filing cabinet in the office. And do you know, I got such an absolute shit canning for it. Mm-hmm. They were all, when the boys used to walk in from the workshop past my office and seen it, they were all absolutely just like horrified and insulted. And I got made to take that calendar down, mind you. I got made to get that calendar down.
Because and look, I think
them, and yet I could walk out to the workshop and there'd be boobs hanging out, looking at me every which way, and everything else hanging out.
I genuinely don't care.
No, and you don't, but it's like, hey.
I don't, but it's also, you know, it's a workplace.
Yeah, that's right.
Come on. Like, let's just keep it even for everyone.
And we're talking 30 years ago, so that was.
It still happens now, though, Joe. I'm not saying that we've got to erase everything, it's a workplace.
Workplace. That's right, and it's got to be acceptable behaviour. So it's not classed as acceptable behaviour now.
But I think it's this, you know, the moment that we say anything, it's, oh, like, you're precious, you're this. And it's like, I couldn't give a damn. Like, a pair of boobs is a pair of boobs. Guess what? We've all got them.
Oh, yeah, that's all the same.
But it's a workplace. Can we just kind of bring it up a notch? Like, we're all better than that. Like, what you do in your own time's on you, but this is a workplace. Right. Let's move past it. So,
yeah. All right, then. So tell us about how you became so passionate about diversity and inclusion. Did it derive from a particular experience you actually had?
I don't think I realised probably how passionate I was about it until I fell into it. And I think it was that first moment that, one, being the only dare I say, white female on site in Papua New Guinea. And I was with all the house Marys, shoved in this little donga, treated so differently that I was just like, they didn't know what to do with me. They were just so floored what to do with this white woman on site, that I was treated very, and not necessarily in a bad way, no, but I was treated so differently that I went, this feels weird. Like, just treat me as a person.
Yeah.
Why am I being treated so differently based on my gender? And I get that there was that level of, like, we want to give you respect. You know, the boys' dongas are pretty foul. So I get that it came from a nice place. But, well, why are the boys' dongas pretty foul? Why can't we just be treated as humans?
Such a segregation.
Yeah. 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 And so that kind of was like the first spark. And then the next one, I guess, was really in that attending my first networking event in health and safety. Looked around the room, and it's that whole you can't be what you can't see. Mm-hmm. When I see that nearly everyone in the room is middle-aged, balding white men, I went, shit, I'm in the wrong place. What have I done? You know, why have I made, you know, I come from a HR career, and dare I say, majority of the room were female. I really felt that moment of, what have I done? How am I ever going to learn? How am I ever going to feel confident to ask a question? How am I ever going to overcome some of the challenges that I was seeing in PNG that I wanted to discuss when this is what, you know, and it was this real chest beating, I'm better than you, I follow this, you know, you're still doing zero harm, well, you must be an idiot. And it was just like, aren't we all on a journey? Yeah. Aren't we all trying to get from A to B? And how we get there is, you know, based on where our organization is at. And so I think I just at that point just went, right, well, something's got to change. And as I said, I thought it would be, I was talking to a recruiter. The company I was working with was looking like it was going to close up. Obviously, price of gold started to change. So, you know, drilling for it doesn't necessarily become feasible. And we were all likely to be made redundant. So I was like, all right, well, let's start the conversation. Conversation quickly turned into, who can I talk to about this stuff? There's not this kind of space to host it. So between this recruiter and I, who, you know, I still hand on heart go, this was a game-changing conversation, said, well, why don't, she's like, you've got such a passionate voice about it. You've got such a, like, natural ability to kind of have these conversations. Why don't you do something about it? I was like, I don't even know where to start. Me, like, blah, 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 blah. Like all the negative voices.
I mean,
trying to push it down.
Yep.
Unique name, Women in Safety. And ever since, I think, to do it its full duty, have had to really understand more. And I still am on that learning journey around diversity and inclusion and what we can do better and how we can influence, how we can make change. But I think it's given me clarity on we need to exist still. And I hope one day that women in safety doesn't have to exist.
Yeah.
But there is still very much a market to bring these conversations, to empower them in their own journey. And I don't want people to feel the isolation and the, you know, why is this me? Why am I out of place here when they come into Women in Safety? So, yeah, I would say it definitely was a fallen into, but very much, you know, I think there was always an underlying passion there. I just didn't know how to channel that or what it meant. So
in learning that, so what did your professional development path look like? You know, have you followed some?
Yeah, so I am a podcast listener. I am a reader. I very much have followed the team from Work 180. So Work 180 are
great team, aren't they?
Brilliant team around, you know, really endorsing that great workplaces for women and creating policies that support working women. And then just in my own kind of research study, trying to, and I think it is always that, I have always felt the need, because there is the Australian Institute of Health and Safety.
Yeah.
So there was this place for health and safety professionals to come together. And for a lot of years, I felt like I had to justify why I existed. And that meant looking into the importance of diversity and inclusion, mm-hmm. why having a more diverse workplace makes for better outcomes and things like that. So it was very much out of my own self-doubt and, you know, this, and it's only me, I don't have a team. So any feedback that kind of came through, or this, you know, the negative kind of comments that sometimes have come through around, why do you have women in safety? Is that I could kind of talk to that diversity piece and what outcomes it looks like for organizations. So very much just personal interest, personal reading, podcast, YouTube reading, connecting with people, you know, following right. people on LinkedIn who absolutely chant it much better than I could,
yeah.
and soaking up even 10% of it. So, yeah.
And there's so much out there. And as you say, you know, we originally used to call it like wasting time, like just staring at your phone and that, but when there's so much resource out there and particularly on
content.
The content is unbelievable. As you said, you just get immersed in it and you can't drag yourself away. You read one article and that leads on to, you know, it feeds on to another article, and there's just so much that you want to take in, but it's just, oh, it's all too consuming. But there's a world of resource and content out there that can introduce you to a lot more than what you're actually, you know, that even your workplace may be.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely showing there. So now tell us particularly more about Women in Safety and walk us through what the network has to offer and how best being a member benefits not only women working professionally in health and safety, but more so the business and organisations they represent in particular.
Yeah, and this is where I had to get clear, I guess, around what our point of difference was and what am I trying to achieve in continuing it. Because, you know, for many years, working full time, doing this on the side, it's that balance of, is it all too hard? Is it serving its purpose? It can kind of be thankless, as you can appreciate. What's my point of difference? What am I trying to do? What am I serving? And what I've come to realize is, so many of the conversations, so many of the sessions that we've held have never been about teaching health and safety professionals how to be a health and safety professional. Mm-hmm. Now, we go by empower, transform, and inspire. And the reason I've picked those words is because what I have tried to now really refine and narrow down is that if a female health and safety professional and some of our male champions of change come into the network and the membership, that they feel empowered. They feel empowered in what they do. They transform from point A to point B. It might be for this piece of time or this project or this skill, and they feel inspired to do it because they were the things that I didn't feel I had and that I was lacking. And what it means is when we run a session, as I said, not traditionally teaching them how to be a safety professional, mm-hmm. how to be a professional to their best selves. And what that means is when they turn up on the job to do their job, they've got this whole, they've got their backing, mm-hmm. right? They've got hundreds of people that they can turn to and go, today sucked and this is why. But they've got all of these skills that I'm hopefully imparting with them through our webinars, through our mentoring, through our conversations in our membership, that when they do turn up, they're bringing their best selves. Because when we bring our best selves to work and we're empowered, we've transformed, we're inspired by what we're doing, it means we get better outcomes. It means that we can have genuine conversations, that we can go into a negotiation or conflict with a little bit more confidence than we might have had last week. And that to me is why it is so important, because I'm not teaching them to be a safety professional. Mm-hmm. I'm teaching them to bring their best selves to work, being supported within a community, is a huge part of that. Knowing that they can come and ask a question without that, well, you're an idiot, why would you ask that? Or what do you don't yeah. you don't know that? Like, yeah. shouldn't you know that? Guess what? I don't know it. You know, I was sitting there doing some work on a client and I'm like, I've never done this for in health and safety. Hey, have you done this before? Has anyone had any experience?
And that's the best part of a network, isn't it? Because it's about shared experiences. And yeah. that's what I like to go into networking about. It's not about an exchange. It's about an experience. So if you have something to share, share it and ask the question, oh, have you come across this before? How did you handle it? Mm. And then you learn so much more by asking those questions and sharing. So make
I think about as well that if we don't, we think about the reason we got into the profession, what lights us up, why are we doing health and safety? And it's to make sure our loved ones, your loved ones, their loved ones, that they get to experience the weekend. They get to experience the new puppy, you know, they can go and take their four-wheel drive on the beach. Whatever it is that lights them up outside of work, they get to experience that. Now, this whole notion that we should keep it closed, that, you know, well, I wrote all of these documents, so I should keep them. We're just trying to, if we save one life, we did better than yesterday. We did better than last week. Like that's at the core. We want people to go home safely. Why are we trying to hang on to that? Let's share it. Let's have those conversations. And that is what I hope I, you know, from a leave the legacy kind of piece is what Women in Safety is achieving.
And that's a great legacy to leave, because that's what I say about kick-ass women is always kick-ass attitude is being your brightest, happiest version of yourself, because you love what you do and you're confident in what you do, but you have that network behind you that back you up and you don't have any fear or doubt that in yourself, because you know you have that support system behind you. Mm. So I think the network system is a great system to have, and to have as a family, and particularly not only just for your work life, but for your personal life too. How many friends do you know you meet and make through networking and from shared experiences? So it's a great resource to and a great thing to be a part of. So what advice would you give to girls interested in a career in professional health and safety?
Oh, run. No. No, I think it is. And dare I say, I was talking to my brother about it this morning. He's kind of, you know, thinking about where he fits in his kind of career path at the moment. And I said, you know, you've got a lot of unique skills. Say you're already working in it and you're thinking about transitioning, talk to the people that are doing it. How can you learn from them? How can you be curious to kind of, could I do that? You know, how could I maybe run the toolbox talk, or could I have a go at writing it? You know, starting to share, starting to ask the questions. There's obviously the very formal paths to take from a studying perspective, and I certainly won't share those because I think, you know, we're all adult enough to go and look up the qualification elements of it. But I think asking questions, talking to people in your existing network, whether that's family or friends, around what their experiences are in their workplace. You know, and this is my husband, I am so bloody proud. He started a new job. And he has said to his team, he wants everyone, he has not once said to them in his first, I think this is week three for him, tell me about your career, what are your qualifications, nothing. But you can bet your bottom dollar, he can tell you all of his team, who their partner is, their dog's name, their kids, because he said that's the stuff that if I feel connected and we're all turning up to work happy, the outputs happen. And I was like, you must have been listening to me for a few years now, because that's a big shift in his communication style as a leader. So I think it's that curiosity. Talk to the people that are already in your network. Ask them how they feel about work. What would they change? You know, What is it that lights them up in the workplace? What's a frustration? And start learning just some of those challenges that people face in health and safety, because I think then that starts to pull out that, why are you going to do it? Why do you want to do health and safety?
Yeah, you find a purpose there. And if that purpose is there, and that, and the need or the want to help make a difference, where you'll pursue it. And I think we might have covered this question, your thoughts on women empowerment in the business sector, so the advantages and challenges and opportunities. I think we might have covered that, but if you want to add anything more to that.
Yeah, look, I think it's changing. I think we as females can get in our own way. And I think we need to see more of that. We need to see more Rapunzel women, not drawbridge women. And I would always challenge anyone to think about what is their drawbridge or what is their Rapunzel moment, because I think we can all say, and I've had moments of being a drawbridge where I'm like, you know, really written someone off, or, you know, done things and you go, oh, I've learned from that. But yeah, I think we all need to, as females, if we're going to continue to empower one another in business, I think we need to consider, how we
support each other.
Support each other.
And I think that's a big thing. Women need to be better at supporting each other, because there's always, you know, there's a lot of the queen bee syndrome still around. They'll stomp on anyone and everyone to get to the position they want, and then they won't help
anyone. But I think it's like, and this is an example that I gave someone the other week, you only have to look as far as a mum's group on Facebook to see how brutal women can be to one another.
And aren't they? Oh, just it's so sad to see how nasty that
and we talk about women's empowerment and we want this, but you've only got to look in a mum's group to see just how far we're pushing each other back.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
It's something that, as I said, women need to be better at supporting women. Now, you've accomplished some fantastic milestones in your career. So which achievement do you look at and think, I'd love to go back in time and tell the younger me that this was actually possible and this is what you will achieve?
I don't even know where to start. What would I do? What would I say?
Like, what about women in safety, the network? I think, you know.
Yeah, I think, like, I was only 20, just over 25, 26 when I started thinking about it. And I never imagined it would be where it is today. Right. And I still don't. I still pinch myself. That's definitely a moment. I think even just that first moment where I changed from HR into health and safety, that keep going, that it will, you know, you will have your aha moments, and that this is a lesson, and one day you will learn from this. And this will be, you know, guiding lights on how you change things. So,
and that's a big lesson there, because every successful person has major failures, and that's where you learn.
I haven't always got it right, and I'm okay with that.
No one ever does. Who does ever get it right? No one gets it perfect.
And it's admitting that.
That's where we learn the most. From our failures. So you get back up and you step over.
Fail is first attempt in learning.
That's right. It's exactly right.
Yeah. And that's what I always try and remember, is that this is just, what lesson are you learning right now?
So what are your next big goals or projects for the remainder of 2022 and, say, going into 2023?
Yeah, look, we've got some really exciting stuff coming up. We have just announced, so last year we had our first virtual summit, so it was a full day. This year we have just launched that we are doing a virtual summit for kind of three quarters of the day, and the last half of the day is our first ever Women in Safety Awards.
I did see that actually come up on your post the other day, so congratulations. Yeah. That's a great initiative to introduce.
I've wanted to do it for a long time, and I think, you know, that celebrating success, we just don't do it often enough. And the summit is just an opportunity to come together and learn off some really cool speakers. So we're just in the midst of finalizing that. It's pretty well done. And then the awards categories, we're just kind of refinalizing. Judges are pretty well locked in. And yeah, just we've just put calls out for sponsors to sponsor those events. So if anyone's listening wants to sponsor, by all means.
Yes.
And then, yeah, just continuing with masterclasses, webinars. We've got them pretty well jam-packed now until the end of the year. And then we'll
start getting good engagement with them, Alana? Like you've
really, really good engagement. Yeah. And, you know, the conversations that we're having. So we have the empowered members that come together every month in our membership mingle. And I love those conversations. It's the, this is why I started. It's the, tell me about your work boots. Tell me about your experience with this. What are you doing with that? Like, oh, has anyone studied this? How did you find it? This is just gold. Because I go, this is why I started it, is that these people feel safe enough to go, I don't know what I'm doing. I want this. Has anyone had experience? And I'm like, yes. So that's really cool.
Yeah, no, the awards, when I read the post, I was so excited myself, thinking that is just a great initiative to take on board and to kick off. So
yeah really excited.
We wish you all the best and success with that, and encourage all the women in health and safety careers to get on board and support that, and nominate themselves or nominate someone they think is worthy of getting the acknowledgement. All right. Well, Alana, thank you very much. It's been a great conversation, and one I'm sure that everyone's going to learn a lot from and take on board. Thanks again for sharing your time, your valuable time with us this afternoon. We'll put all your links up. I see we can see your QR code there. We can scan for the latest events going on in women in safety. And we'll put your links up under the show notes. And anyone that wanting to reach out to Alana can do so by following those links, and by all means get in touch with Alana and follow up on women in safety if you're in.
Look, you know, for us it really is about no one feeling isolated. And I know that it can be an isolating profession at times, so yeah, by all means, if you need a space to have a safe conversation, no pun intended, we're there for it.
Excellent. All right, then. Thanks, Alana. And we will look forward to catching up with you later in the year to find out how it all went with the summit and the awards.
Yeah, thanks, Jo. Have a really safe afternoon.
Thank you.
See you later.
Hey, Glowgetters. Have you heard about Kick-Ass Women? Founded by Jo Sainsbury, Kick-Ass Women is dedicated to empowering and supporting women who are considering a career change into an industry role. Visit our brand new website at www.kickasswomen.com.au or follow Kick-Ass Women on Facebook and LinkedIn today to keep up to date with all things Kick-Ass Women and the incredible opportunities and content we have for you. See you there, glow-getters.
That's it, guys. I do hope you enjoyed our show and our special guest. A very big special thank you to Alana Ball for sharing all of that goodness of women in safety, a great deal of invaluable information with us. And I hope you've all found the information inspiring and that it gives you something to ponder and perhaps feed the curiosity and action over the weekend. Now, Women in Safety is on a mission to recognise and boost the careers of women in the profession, as well as to inspire the next generation of leaders. This network promotes proactive steps towards personal and professional development while also championing for an inclusive and diverse space. From staying up to date on the latest industry trends to career and leadership strategies to help you stand out from the crowd and personalise your career, to diving into topics like psychological safety and technological innovation, Women in Safety promises to be a network of empowerment, transformation and inspiration. As always, I really appreciate you guys giving me your time to listen to this radio show. You can find more information on this episode with Alana Ball and Women in Safety in the show notes or on my social media pages, or visit my website, www.kickasswomen.com.au. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast to get the latest episodes sent directly to you. Well, that's all for today's show. Thanks for your company and for listening to Kick-Ass Radio. It's not goodbye, but see you later. Stay safe and well. Keep in touch, POSCOMS. Go on, get your glow on. Become a glow getter.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Kick-Ass Radio, where we kick goals and deliver empowering conversations for women. Want to hear more from Kick-Ass Women and Jo Sainsbury? Visit the Kick-Ass Women website or follow Kick-Ass Women on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram. See you on the next episode of Kick-Ass Radio.